Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, catch and release judges. Are they doing something wrong or just honoring our right to bail pending trial? We'll ask UNM criminal law professor Leo Romero, who headed up New Mexico's Bail Reform Committee. Professor Leo Romero, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Leo, before we get into the niceties of bail reform, and it can get pretty complex, I'd like a little primer on bail, because it was always my impression that people were supposed to be released pending trial on bail. Is that not correct?
All right. And that's essentially correct. There is a presumption of release because a person has only been charged with an offense. They've never had a trial. They have not been convicted. And to hold somebody in jail pending trial, which could take months or even years, is basically punishing a person without being adjudicated guilty.
So I was astounded in really preparing for the show, and I'm someone who actually practiced law, to learn that such a high proportion of people are not being released throughout the United States pending trial. I mean, I read numbers anywhere from 34% to 70% of imprisoned people are imprisoned pending trial. I mean, that's just like a shocking number.
Right. I think that occurred because a practice developed in the United States, not only in New Mexico, that assumed that you're only entitled to release if you could post a money bond. And some people could afford the money bond that was set by the court and therefore would release pending trial. Others could not afford to hire a bondsman or to post bond on their own and therefore sat in jail for months pending trial.
So how did this practice of, now my understanding is that England didn't have the commercial bail bond industry. How did the commercial bail bond industry grow up in the United States and become really so prevalent?
I think it became prevalent because there was this notion that if a person put up some money, they would have some skin in the game and have an incentive to return for trial. And what happened was that judges and the system stopped looking at more important factors to determine whether a person was likely to appear at trial when required. So they've relied on money as sort of an easy proxy, and it became just ubiquitous. And so the whole bail industry grew up around it. And
everyone, all those bail bond stores you see around the courthouse.
Yeah, and you'll see those all over. I mean, in our committee, we heard that there were 55 bail companies operating in New Mexico. So I think the system sort of came to rely on money bonds as a means for releasing defendants pending trial. But as a result, what it really meant was that money bonds were keeping people in jail rather than...
Because people couldn't get them.
Because they couldn't get them.
So what does it take to, say a $100,000 bond? What does it take to get a $100,000 bond?
Well, if you don't have the $100,000 yourself,
yeah, right,
then you have to go to a bail bondsman. And a bail bondsman generally will charge 10% of the $100,000.
So 10 grand.
Yes, and that is money that you'll never see again.
Non-refundable.
Non-refundable, and then the bondsman will then post the $100,000 bond with the court.
So another thing I read in preparing for the show was that in New Mexico, about 40% of the incarcerated people are incarcerated prior to trial, and that sort of fits in with the national scope. And this has sort of been the target of a lot of civil rights advocates who basically echo what you said at the beginning of the show, which was this is unjust, unfair, and not good criminal practice. It leads to recidivism, destroys families, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and you lose a job. If a person's employed and gets arrested, and then they cannot afford the money bond that is set by the court, they're going to stay in jail. They lose their jobs. Family loses the support. So there are a lot of consequences that are adverse to the individual who ends up spending time in jail before the trial.
And cost is the cost of keeping people in jail was something that was, I think, prominently discussed recently. And it's not cheap, right, to keep somebody in jail.
No, it is not. And the county officials are really quite concerned about the cost of holding people in jail.
I mean, I read somewhere like $100 a day or something was around.
Yeah, I forget what the figure is, but it's expensive to house someone over at the jail.
So that really brings us to a case that I really would like to talk about, and that's State versus Brown. And that's this landmark decision by the New Mexico Supreme Court, which really upended the whole bail system in New Mexico. And I wonder if you could tell us something about that case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that case was decided, I think, in 2014 by the New Mexico Supreme Court. And in a way, it didn't upend the whole bail system in New Mexico.
Okay.
What it did was saying that the court in that case was not following the law on bail in New Mexico. In that particular case, the defendant was charged with first-degree murder, and the judge set a $250,000 money bond. The defendant couldn't make that bond, and so he sat in jail for 2.5 years. Meanwhile, his attorneys presented to the court evidence that and alternatives that would permit the defendant to be released, and this defendant would not pose a danger to the community or would not pose a flight risk, and the judge disregarded that evidence.
The district court judge, the trial
district court judge disregarded that evidence, even though it was not controverted, saying, well, it's really is a serious charge, first-degree murder, and I think I need to keep that $250,000 money bond.
Yeah, he could have been in prison. Brown could face imprisonment for life on that charge.
Right. And so the defendant was pending trial 2.5 years, and the Supreme Court said, you've got to release this person because there are conditions that can be imposed on his release that would satisfy the community's safety and would also ensure that the defendant would appear at trial. So there was no reason to keep this person in jail pending trial.
You know, one of the things that's, to me, remarkable about that case was that there was no doubt that Brown, to me, when I'm reading it, there's no doubt that Brown was guilty. That didn't seem to be contested at all. And there also seemed to be no doubt that he was an excellent candidate for bail. They'd lined up a job for him. His father was going to be custodian. A psychologist said he would be great candidate for bail. The Pretrial Services Administration, which administers the whole bail system, said he'd be terrific. And so there was all this uncontested evidence. The state didn't challenge any of this. They just simply argued it's a big charge and he ought to be kept in jail.
Right. I think the only reason for keeping someone in jail pending trial is when they are a real danger to the community. So if you release this person, the odds or the risk that he's going to commit another crime, and a serious crime, is really high. Basically an unacceptable risk. Or the other risk is flight risk. And that is the risk that the defendant, if you release him pending trial, is going to flee. You know, may go down to Mexico, be outside of the reach of authorities. So those are the two concerns that the system takes into account. One is danger risk, and the other one is flight risk. And so a good bail system should be designed to determine how much of a risk this person is. And risk varies from individual to individual.
And that's another thing the court emphasized.
Right. And so someone can be a high risk of danger. Someone can be a low risk. They can be a high risk of a flight, or they could be a very low risk. And just to determine whether a person should be detained by setting a high money bond based solely on the charge doesn't make sense because you've ignored the relevant evidence with regard to risk of flight and risk of danger.
So I want to pick up on those two points with you, but first we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
I'm Ira Glass. A cop pulls a guy over because his van is swerving across the road.
Standing next to the man was a chimpanzee. The man said he was doing really well, and then he lost control of the van. And I'm like, lost control of the van? Like, at what point was the chimpanzee really in charge of this thing?
Some stories just don't fit under the daily news shows. This American Life.
Sundays at 4 on KUNM.
We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and we're very pleased to have in the studio a former UNM dean and currently criminal law professor, Leo Romero, and we're talking about bail reform. And it seemed to me that one of the things about State versus Brown was that was pointed out that there was nothing really in the Constitution to keep dangerous defendants in jail. And what the judges were doing were just trying to set a high money bond to do it. The court said that was wrong. Right. It seemed to me that based on that, that the people were saying, well, now what do we do? And it seems to me like that's where you and your committee come into the picture.
Right. Yeah, and it's one of the things pointed out in the Brown decision is that money bond, which was designed to release people pending trial, turned out to be used to detain people. And so judges, based on the charge, were setting high money bonds in order to detain someone, primarily because they didn't have any other
means. Right.
They didn't have any authority to hold someone. Because of the right to bail in the New Mexico Constitution. So what they did was set a high money bail that they knew the person couldn't post, and therefore the person was being detained. So the court said in Brown, that's wrong. I mean, if there's a right to bail in the New Mexico Constitution, we've got to adhere to it. So one of the first recommendations of our ad hoc committee...
Who appointed your committee?
The Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court appointed.
In fact, it's called the Supreme Court Ad Hoc Committee on Pretrial Release.
I see.
So the Supreme Court appointed all of the members of the committee. And one of our first recommendations to the Supreme Court was that to amend the New Mexico constitutional provision on bail to give judges the authority to detain, pending trial, those dangerous defendants who presented an unacceptable risk of danger to the community. And let the judges be honest about it. And make a determination that this person was such a high risk of committing another crime and being a danger to the community that this person should be detained.
And another thing it seemed to me that you did was sort of aligned the Constitution mm-hmm. with the language of State versus Brown in terms of individualized assessments of risk, what you'd just been talking about.
Yeah, and we tried to make sure ensure that there would be a hearing, a process in which the judge would be making that individualized determination of risk. And the constitutional provision requires that the prosecutor file a motion to detain someone pending trial. The prosecutor has the burden of showing by clear and convincing evidence that this person cannot be released because that person presents an unacceptable danger, a risk of danger, and then there's no conditions that could be imposed on that defendant that would assure the safety of the community.
Now, you had all kinds of stakeholders on this committee, right?
Yes, we had DAs.
Did you have judges?
We had judges, district court judges. Mm-hmm. Metropolitan court judges, magistrate judges, uh-huh. Municipal court judges, and we had
bond people.
We had even an attorney who represents the county,
uh-huh.
and in particular the jail.
I see.
We had district attorneys, as you mentioned. We even had two bondsmen on the committee.
So, and you achieve consensus. You end up drafting something that pretty much achieves consensus, and it kind of sails through the legislature, and then it really sails through the people have to approve a constitutional amendment, right, and it gets approved.
Yeah, and I think the committee was pretty much in agreement on that particular amendment. Because it, you know, in a way, the community was saying we need to have the worst of the worst. They ought to be detained, and everybody agreed. You know, defense lawyers, prosecutors, judges said, yeah, there are some people who should not be released into the community.
And so, was it also this committee that then formed, you know, proposed court rules as to how this new constitutional amendment was going to be effectuated?
Yes. In order to implement the constitutional amendment, our committee then proposed a Rule 409 that would provide the procedures to be followed by the prosecutors and by the judges to make the determination whether a person should be detained under the new constitutional amendment.
So, and people may not realize this, but there's all kinds of court rules governing all kinds of things, and they need to be pretty straightforward so the attorneys and courts know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And what I'd like to do is kind of concentrate on Bernalillo County, because that's where this whole catch and release issue came about. It was, you know, prominently used in commercials during the mayoral campaign. Mm-hmm. And it also seems to be the place that, at least in part, the governor was referring to when she said that your constitutional amendment should be repealed and replaced. And what you end up requiring, as you said, is an individualized determination of flight risk and of danger. And for Bernalillo County, that almost seems completely impractical in some ways. And I think, and what I'm going to suggest to you is that the judicial system was so entirely stressed even before this that I'm not sure how you were going to have hearings for every possible defendant. And let me just mention the stress, which is our DA in Bernalillo County is saying he's only going to try the worst of the worst. That is, he's going to ignore a lot of criminal offenses. It seems to me if you're really concerned about criminal law, you would be concerned about that more than anything, that the DEA is saying he doesn't have enough money to actually prosecute people who are being arrested.
Well, let me respond to it in this way. Anytime a person is arrested, he or she has the right to have the judge determine whether the person is going to be released pending trial or now detained pending trial. So the stress on the community, the number of cases being filed each year, that puts a stress, but it's also going to, the constitutional amendment doesn't change that at all. The constitutional amendment just says that for those that you want to detain pending trial, you can't use a high money bond. You now have to show, this is for the prosecutor, has to show that this person is a real danger to the community based on the individual and not solely on the charge.
But the way the system was working was it had nothing to do with that. That is, they had sort of an automatic, now I'm not really sure I understand this, but it was kind of an automatic system based on the charge that actually could even be released at the jail based on what the charge was, well, if you posted bond.
Right. But if, I think the, with this constitutional amendment, I think some of the criticism has come from the DAs because it's no longer as easy to detain someone pending trial as it was before. And that's because of the Brown case. Before this constitutional amendment, it was fairly easy for a district attorney to have someone detained who's charged with a real serious violent crime by just asking a judge for a high money bond, and the person would be detained pending trial. Now, under the constitutional amendment, the district attorney can't rely on a high money bond to detain the person. The district attorney now has to file a motion to detain, and the rules require that the prosecutor introduce evidence to show that the person is a danger to the community and such a high danger that there's no conditions of release that would assure the safety of the community. So this means that the district attorneys probably have to make some choices and establish some priorities about who are the people that they want to detain pending trial.
But even apart from deciding who to detain pending trial, what the district attorney is saying is he doesn't even have enough money to prosecute people who are just arrested. He has to not prosecute a whole bunch of people that aren't the worst of the worst, right? He's saying that.
Right. But this constitutional amendment
has
and the bail reform has nothing to do with that.
Right. And what I'm suggesting to you is if you're really worried about enforcement of criminal law, what you have here is sort of the opposite of the broken window theory, which is you prosecute every small case. Here, not based on policy, but just based on lack of funds, the DA is already saying, I don't have enough money to prosecute everybody I should be prosecuting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the whole criminal justice system has been underfunded. I think the district attorney makes a valid claim that they need more resources. And to the extent that they have more resources, that means they bring more cases, which means then the public defender's office needs more resources.
And they're
to defend
trying not
them.
To accept cases, right?
Right. And so they're stressed as well.
Right.
And, of course, you're also talking about if there are more cases filed, you're going to need more judges to adjudicate those cases. So the system is underfunded. I think the real challenge is somehow bringing down the level of crime committed in our communities. Because that really drives the whole criminal justice system.
Let me just mention, if you just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to be in the studio with Professor Leo Romero. He's the former dean of the UNM Law School. He's also a criminal law professor. And I want to talk to you specifically now about Bernalillo County, because Bernalillo County is sort of a special case with regard to how the system's working, and that's because of something that I was completely unaware of called a public safety assessment tool.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us what the public safety assessment tool is and how that's working?
Yes, this is a tool that was developed by the Arnold Foundation, and this foundation reviewed, I think, over 1.5 million cases where people were released pending trial, and looked at the factors that were involved in every one of those release decisions, and then tracked the individuals who were released to see whether they committed a crime while released or whether they failed to appear when their trial was called. And they identified 9 factors that were really most relevant to assessing the risk of a person committing a new crime if released or for fleeing if they were released. And so this public safety assessment tool essentially uses those 9 factors and assigns a score to each one of them and then puts it into a grid, or actually into a matrix, that will score them and will give you an indication of whether this person is a low risk or a high risk or a medium risk, and would indicate if the person is, like, for example, a medium risk, whether the person should be released on medium conditions of release or more restrictive conditions of release. And so this information, this as a result of this matrix and the recommendation that
is it, does it result in a number score, or a simple number?
Does result in a number score in terms of both flight risk and also danger risk.
I see. Well, I want to talk to you about one exercise of discretion, and that's the Raul Torres. Again, we're talking about the Bernalillo County DA. And he is complaining about how the system's working. He's saying that in about 15% of the cases, total arrestees, I guess, he is objecting to their release, but he's only succeeding about 5% of the time, which means he's losing 2/3 of the time. And I have no experience in criminal law, but in general, I found judges really listen to the prosecutor, to the DA. Right. And here we have a DA that says, I'm losing 2/3 of the time.
Right. Well, the Public Defender's Office responded to that allegation.
Okay.
And their research showed that, in fact, the DAs are winning in these detention hearings about 40%. I think also the Second Judicial District, the judges, also did a study of the cases here in Bernalillo County. And again, it shows that the district attorneys are winning at about, I think, maybe a third of their cases. Not 15%, but a higher percentage. And apparently that tracks fairly closely to the experience in other jurisdictions that have preventive detention like we have now under that constitutional amendment.
So we're nearing the end of the show, and I'd like to sort of ask you, first of all, how do you think the system's working so far?
Well, I think it's really too early to make a really sound judgment. This new system went into effect in July 1 of this year.
So 5 months.
5 months. And I think it's going to take a little bit of time for the district attorneys to adjust to it, to the courts, and for the public defenders. And I think it needs a little bit of time to work. And then let's then look at the data, and let's look at the statistics in terms of how many cases are filed, how many cases result in detention, and also look to see, for those people who are released, you know, what is a percentage of those people who appear for their trial when required, how many of those people when they're who are released commit a new crime while released. I think we need data in order to make a really sound assessment of how well it's working.
So are you seeing big problems so far?
No.
We are going to have to leave it there. I'd like to thank UNM Law Professor Leo Romero for joining me today. Thanks also to my engineer, Marshall Broyles. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are available wherever you get podcasts. Search Stephen Spitz. Archives of my past shows are available at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.